Are you a South Florida property owner with an insurance claim? Are you dealing with water, mold, or fire damage? Looking for a reputable, fully licensed, insured, and certified contractor? Water Cleanup of Florida is here for you 24 hours a day. When a disaster strikes in your home or business, you need specialized, fast, and reliable services. Water Cleanup of Florida understands the impact and stress an unexpected disaster may cause. With over 62 years of combined experience, Michael, Robert, and Eric and their team is prepared to handle any size disaster. The guys are born and raised in South Florida, so changing the narrative on the way contractors conduct business in South Florida is extremely important to them. Their objective is to make cleanup and insurance claim process painless and hassle-free. Water Cleanup of Florida is also a licensed building contractor, so they provide the A to Z service, one-stop shopping that busy homeowners and business owners require. There's no need to bring in other contractors. They will handle it all for you. Call or text them anytime at 561-408-7835 for immediate assistance. The number again, 561-408-7835. Water Cleanup of Florida. This show is brought to you by Prize Picks. Prize Picks is a revolutionary new daily fantasy game whereby you pick 2, 3, or 4 players to go over or under their fantasy point projections, and if you're correct, you win. Pick 2 or more players from the same sport or league, or go cross leagues for your parlay. Use the promo code 5, that's F-I-V-E, 5, and receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100. But first, sign up at prizepicks.com to start winning today. Sports betting season is in full force. You need a sportsbook with integrity and longevity like BetUS. You may already know this, but BetUS has been pioneers in the sportsbook industry for almost 3 decades, thriving and paying their loyal customer base. That is BetUS.com. They have loads of bonuses. Join now or call 800-69-BETUS. That is 800-MY-BETUS. And you will receive a 125% sign-up bonus by using the bonus code 5. That's the word 5, F-I-V-E. They also have re-up and referral bonuses as well. Follow my lead and open an account with BetUS. You bet, you win, you get paid. BetUS. This show is brought to you by Lewis Peters State Farm, agency representing the number one auto and home insurer in the United States for more than 60 years combined experience in the insurance industry. Local agents that understand South Florida's unique market, you have access to them 24/7, walk-in, call-in, click-in through lewispeters.com. You can find them online on social media at SF Agent Peters, or you can call at 305-275-5585. Remember, lewispeters.com.
Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, a podcast covering the Miami Dolphins and the NFL. Now, here's your hosts, Chris, Alf, and Simon.
And we're on, and welcome to another edition of 3 Yards Per Carry. I'm Alfredo Arteaga. Chris Coughlin is here, but Simon Clancy is not, because it's his birthday, and he is, I guess I would say he's out, no?
He's celebrating his birthday with the owner of the Green Bay Packers.
Yes, he is. Yeah. Yeah. And debating what they're going to do at quarterback, right? Because Aaron Rodgers is hemming and hawing for the next 2 months to whether he's going to play or not.
I think he's just hemming and hawing, period.
Yeah. He likes to do that. Like Aaron Rodgers likes to do that. Like it's his thing now.
It's his thing. Like he's so emo now.
He is, right down to the knit cap.
I'm not telling you. Like he is just straight emo.
Yeah, I can't handicap that situation. Okay. Why the hell would you want to go to Denver and deal with what we saw this past Sunday? All right. That was just like no. Okay. I'm sorry. Like if you ask me, you know, usually you want to go somewhere where it's easier, right? Like he has the dream quarterback job. That division is absolute garbage. Like it's a walk to a home game in the second round every single year. Why the hell would he go to Denver? You know,
well, I guess it probably has to do with like the location, the ownership, the fan, you know, fan base, stuff like that. I mean, he's used to some pretty good fans in Green Bay, like very loyal fans in Green Bay. Mm-hmm. And you know, good game situation and stuff like that. And he also is from out west and loves it out there. And so, I mean, Denver has a great fan base like that. And they, I don't know about ownership. I don't know how involved is Elway nowadays, because he's a dick.
Supposedly he's been stripped of all his power. Like they've been stripping him for like a year. And I think he's reached the point where he has like no power anymore.
Yeah, I hope so, because that was, you know, this actually brings it back to the Dolphins, because Dolphins fans absolutely loathe Vance Joseph as a candidate for
and we'll get into that
coach.
Get into that. But let me just say this before this. We are always brought to you by Manscaped. Use promo code 5RSN for 20% off your entire order. Now you can get the performance package. Yeah, you heard that right. It's a performance package for $119.99. And you're wondering, $119.99 to shave my balls? Well, listen to this, okay? You get the Lawnmower 4.0. That's an upgrade over the 3.0, which we've been talking about on this podcast for a year. You get the Weed Whacker. Do you know what the Weed Whacker is, by the way,
Chris? I have not received my Weed Whacker yet, but I'm interested in finding out.
Okay, you're getting one, by the way, because I already spoke to Matt. And Matt, by the way, Matt Perdomo, you could follow him on Twitter. I spoke to him, and he told me, yes, I will send stuff to Chris. The Weed Whacker is the ear and nose hair trimmer, okay?
Oh, wow.
All right? Very, very important. I have one. So we're already talking about two devices, okay? And you're wondering, well, you know, it's $120. Well, we're not done. You get the Crop Preserver. That's anti-chafing ball deodorant, all right? And you know I love my ball deodorant. I've been talking about it for a year. You get the Crop Reviver, which is the ball spray toner. Of course, you need ball spray toner. Right?
Reviver. I love the phrasing here.
You get the Magic Mat, which is, they're just disposable shaving mats, but you know, are you really going to drop all your pubes on the floor? Like, come on, you know, have some standards, people. And then this is what I love. You get the Shed. The Shed is their travel bag. Now you would think, okay, this is going to be some cheap ass travel bag. No, it's leather. Look at the travel bag. It's the one I use. Like I throw it in my backpack whenever I travel. It's a great travel bag. So you're talking about the Lawnmower 4.0, the Weed Whacker, the Crop Preserver, Crop Reviver, the mats, and a travel bag for $119.99. But no, if you use it from the promo code 5RSN, you get 20% off of that.
And why wouldn't you do it?
Exactly. So use 5RSN and get 20% off. I guess we'll just start there.
Well, but wait a minute. But there's something about this Manscaped, because, you know, I just want to address this because it's named Manscaped and, you know, it's obviously oriented toward balls and, you know, and our crops and stuff like that. And by the way, ball reviver. I mean, Simon, you know, his birthday is today. He's turning 48 years old, particularly valuable for him. But this is a thing on TikTok. Ladies are using the lawnmower. Ladies are finding it very helpful to use the Manscaped equipment.
Are you sure that website? Themselves. Are you sure that website was TikTok, Chris?
No, yeah, this was not
TikTok. If you look up at your browser, right behind HTTPS, you know, you had to read that part. I don't know if, you know, maybe you had another window open.
This was TikTok, not TIT talk. But ladies are actually finding this very useful. And so I don't want to just say, you know, to all our listeners out there, male and female, and just, you know, siphon or cordon off the men and be like, you know, hey, this is for you, the Manscaped, because the ladies might actually enjoy the lawnmower. I'm just saying, try it. Might change your viewpoint.
And of course, all these devices come with chargers. Okay. So, you know, why wouldn't you do this? It's $119.99.
Not the LA chargers, not Justin Herbert.
No, you don't get Justin Herbert. No.
No. I'm sure the ladies would like that. That would be on TikTok.
Yeah. And of course, free shipping. So nobody's going to hit you for like a $40 or $50 shipping charge after you're done at checkout. So why wouldn't you do it? Go do it now. Use promo code 5RSN. All right, let's start there. There's been a general freak out all week on Dolphins Twitter, and we tend to respond to Dolphins Twitter because most of them are our listeners, right? Mm-hmm. People are threatening you know, to do awful things to themselves if Vance Joseph is hired.
It's really curious. As ignorant and naive as I am, like somebody said something about Vance Joseph, and I was just like very naively, like, Dolphins fans don't hate Vance Joseph. What are you talking about? And then I was inundated with replies. It was like, oh, yes, we do. Yes, we do. Yes, we do. Yes, we do. I was like, okay, Dolphins fans hate Vance Joseph. I understand this now. Now I'm aware. Thanks for catching me up.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't think we're going to talk too much about Vance Joseph because we're going to start here.
I will say this about Vance.
Okay. Like, Don't scare people, Chris.
No, I'm not going to scare people. Forgetting what he did here in Miami, you know, people, because the whole failed head coach thing does, it scares people.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say this. I talked to somebody in Denver who's, you know, who's very privy to the inner workings of the Denver Broncos. And he was, I mean, to say he was set up to fail is like, you know, because a lot of people use that and it's kind of hyperbole and exaggeration. But in this case, man, that really does sound true, because John Elway, I guess, from above, micromanaged every part of Vance Joseph's tenure in Denver. I mean, right down to, you know, he was making the depth chart calls. He was deciding who played on Sunday. You know, he was forcing Vance Joseph to play certain guys over other guys because he wanted to see them on the field. He made Vance deal with like a really crap quarterback, you know, Paxton Lynch. And like he was just, he micromanaged to such a high degree that, that, you know, Vance was just bowled over and he had no choice in the matter because John Elway had so much power in the organization. And it's almost like they hired a guy as inexperienced as Vance was on purpose so that John Elway could basically de facto coach the team. But then on top of things, as if that's not bad enough, I guess Mike McCoy, the offensive coordinator, and we're familiar with him.
Mm-hmm.
He led essentially an insurrection against Vance Joseph from the bottom. Like he was organized, and I'm like, oh yeah.
Whatever. Please don't tell me he was wearing a buffalo head, because that would have been
but seriously, just a beautiful visual. I'm just like, oh well, whatever. And then the guy I was talking to was like, no, really. Like he was organizing coaches against Vance, like to try and I don't know, like usurp his authority. And
they call us a clown show. They call our franchise a clown show.
But I guess in the first year that Vance was there, you know, he was such a player's coach that the players adored him. The players really loved him. They did like him. I mean, it was legit. But in the second year, I think, and I don't know if this is something that somebody above had told him or, you know, something like that, but he tried to switch gears and be a hard ass, you know, kind of like discipline, let's focusing on discipline and stuff like that. You know, I think that's where he started to lose some players, because players had trouble taking him seriously. But also because he was having his authority both, you know, chopped away from him from above and, you know, usurped from below. It was just a total disaster, just a total, absolutely flipping disaster, it sounded like. And that's why, you know, you saw the defense go from number three, the number three defense in the NFL in Vance's first year, as far as yardage is concerned anyway. To number 22, it wasn't all his fault there, and there is such a thing as a learning experience. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, and by the way, breaking news: Hard Rock Stadium has just put their mural on their elevator for the entire off season, and on there is The Weeknd. Of course, you have to have The Weeknd, right? They have Canelo Alvarez, which is great because, you know, he did defend his title in that stadium, and it has two Dolphins. Do you want to care? Do you care to guess who those two Dolphins are? Because one of them is important.
Is one of them Emmanuel Ogba, who they intend to keep, probably?
No, and okay. and that's why my ears perked up a little bit because by the way, we can report. Everybody thinks the deal is going to get done, but there is no deal, and that always makes me nervous as we march toward March.
Sure.
So, any other guesses?
Who are they? Tua Tagovailoa. Is one of them Tua Tagovailoa?
Absolutely. Probably. He's most prominently displayed. But the other one was curiously left off last year. And
Xavien Howard?
Yeah, and this year he's on there. So,
wow. Okay.
So maybe another prove it batch of incentives is on the way for Xavien Howard.
He was not a fan of Flores.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
I mean, we got that from some people. I mean, it's often been implied out there, I think. But he was not a fan of Flores. When Flores was fired, and I remember Flores was explicitly fired pretty much for his, I guess, bedside manner throughout the organization. And, you know, his tendency to point fingers and stuff like that. And Xavien immediately came out with this thing on Instagram that was like, you know, people who point fingers need to look at themselves, you know, and or something along those lines. And I think he was talking about Brian Flores and his tendency to get on everybody and blame everybody for everything.
Mm-hmm. No, and on OnlyFans. And by the way, you could get on OnlyFans for $3 a month. $3 a month. Mm-hmm. I urge you go to Starbucks and ask them what you could get for $3, and you might get security called on you. Okay.
We just rolled out instead of just a patron chat for the now 650 members who are actively discussing at all time. I mean, this is turned into like almost like the most active message board that you see, except without a lot of the garbage that you see in a lot of the message boards. We've both been involved in message boards since ancient times. And unfortunately there is a lot of garbage there and message boards and Reddit and such. But what we notice about the guys in OnlyFans is, you know, listen, if these guys are willing to pay $3 a month, especially pay us, because a lot of the trolls and whatnot, they tend to hate us first off. And yes. if they do listen to our podcast, many of them do grudgingly listen to our podcast anyway, but if they do, the last thing they're going to do is give money to us. Like their pride will not allow it. And, right. So what we get is like a really good selection of people that are willing to pay to, you know, it's only $3, it's nothing, but to pay anything whatsoever, like it just really selects for serious individuals. And that's why we get decent chat. I mean, sometimes it might go off the rails just a little bit, but I mean, at any given time, there's like, you know, 100 people online and looking at the chat. And we just rolled out with a Patron chat for Spanish speakers out there. So yes. Very excited about that.
Yeah. And you know, it's today they were arguing over how to pronounce tamale. Okay. Which is, you know, I don't know. I didn't know that was a thing. I am a Spanish speaker. I speak Spanish. I didn't know that was a thing, but evidently one guy was saying that it drives him crazy how people pronounce tamale. So yeah,
I'm just catching up on that conversation just now, because I do understand some Spanish, by the way. I'm versed.
But if you were on OnlyFans this week, you would have heard some anecdotes that I shared with our patrons, who asked me to share some anecdotes with Brian Flores. And some of them are funny, and some of them I find endearing. Some of them have to be absolutely maddening if you're working under him, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, moving off of Brian Flores, I shared another thing on OnlyFans, and I guess we're going to go there because there seems to be some reports on Twitter. I shared, and I guess I'll share this on the podcast. The rest, you're going to have to read it on OnlyFans, but there's a strong sense in the building that the search is leading toward two guys, Brian Daboll and Mike McDaniel, who I dubbed, by the way, this week, Bong Shula. And I actually put a price on it. Anybody can use that name on their podcast for 99 cents. If you want a season pass, it's $99.99. If you want a lifetime pass, it's $999.99. Okay. But if he is hired, you know those t-shirts are going up, and I'm buying a dozen.
I can actually confirm the in the building part of that, you know, just in the from the standpoint, I was told that an assistant coach that who I will not name, you know, is pretty convinced. Well, he didn't say Brian Daboll. He said that he seems to think that they're after Mike McDaniel, mm-hmm. Specifically. But you know, it's hard to say, you know, who thinks what based on what, and it could be, you know, based on the perception that Brian Daboll is going to go to the Giants and not the Dolphins, or you know, something like that. Mm-hmm. But because a lot of people are kind of operating with that that assumption. I don't think it's a fair assumption. I mean, did you see that Good Morning Football a conversation with Kay Adams and
Chris Carter?
And these people and Chris Carter, and they were talking about Peter Schrager. They were talking about like the Dolphins or the Giants. Like, which would you pick? And all of them, overwhelmingly, like. Dolphins, man. I would not go to the Giants. Like, you know, Dolphins have a strong defense, good players. Yes, they have Tua Tagovailoa, who hasn't necessarily proven himself yet, but you give him a year, and if he doesn't do it for you, you've got two first round picks the next year. They've got the most salary cap space in the league this coming offseason. So they're just like, and no state income tax. So they're just like, this is a no-brainer. This is an absolute no-brainer. The Giants, what could the Giants, they were even like, what could the Giants possibly have going for them over the Dolphins? Like they were not hearing it whatsoever, except Peter Schrager, who's like a Giants fan. And he's like, man, I have to admit it. But it's the Giants. That's all he could come up with. That was literally all he could come up with. It's the Giants.
Yeah, like, Lawrence Taylor is not walking through that door.
Yeah, exactly. And I thought that was really interesting, because we hear quite a bit, you know, from people out there just shitting on the franchise and just saying, you know, we're not going to be able to attract any good head coach candidates because of, you know, pick your reason. It's either because Chris Greer was not fired, or because Tua Tagovailoa is the quarterback, or because Steve Ross is the owner. Just pick your reason. And a lot of people are convinced that that the Dolphins will be the bottom of the pecking order because of that, and everybody's just gonna say no to the Dolphins. And I don't know that that's true. I mean, I could see somebody picking the Giants because they have a really well-run organization, or at least they used to. And some people are really talked about John Mara not being the Maras, but I could see that. I mean, it's a great city. It's you know, people have a thing about New York, and it's a well-run organization and stuff. So I could see it, but at the same time, it's like, are people really going to be like, you know, no to Miami with the situation that Miami has set up? I mean, no. Why would they?
Yeah. And with that, Pat Leonard, who covers the Giants, and he's on Twitter. He put out a post about an hour ago, where he says several league sources believe Bills offensive coordinator Brian Daboll is a favorite to be the Miami Dolphins next head coach. And then he goes on to write, if Daboll takes that job, Dan Quinn and Brian Flores. That's a name I've not heard. A long time. Are the leading contenders to be the Giants' next head coach. I find that fascinating, by the way, because, you know, Patrick Graham is right there.
Yep.
Okay. So keep an eye on Patrick.
He's interviewing. He's
but if Brian Flores gets hired, keep an eye on Patrick Graham.
I would be fascinated to know what Patrick Graham does, because he was very effusive in his praise. He was emotional when he was talking about Brian Flores. Yeah. And, you know, the impact that Brian had on him and everything, he was very emotional and very effusive in his praise. And yet
he left to go take a pay cut.
Yeah, exactly. You wonder, would he go somewhere else? like, and this is sort of the Brian Flores's curse is what I keep hearing is he has these friends, you know, erstwhile friends, who just aren't following. Like he tends to burn his bridges a little bit. Like, you know, we talked about Kyle Van Noy and they were friends, but you know, they didn't leave friends. Kyle Van Noy didn't leave friends.
Yeah.
Flores was the one that kicked him off the team, but you know, absolutely.
You know what I did? A couple of days ago, I went back to the first game of the season this year in New England, right? Uh-huh. Which was Kyle Van Noy's first game against the Dolphins after leaving the Miami Dolphins, right?
Mm-hmm.
He hugged Tua Tagovailoa.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He shook hands with Christian Wilkins after Christian Wilkins was mocking him. All right.
Yeah.
Gave a big bear hug to Emmanuel Ogba. And he shook hands with Gerald Alexander, and then he ran right into the locker room.
That's fitting. But also, like, you know, if you look at what Chad O'Shea went through, like, it was a big deal for him to move his entire family from New England, where they'd been, down to Miami, and then Brian Flores dismissed him a year later. And if several assistant coaches, I'm just told if any of the assistants on the Dolphins right now follow Brian Flores to his next destination, I mean, I'm sure one has to be out there somewhere, but I mean, if several of them do, I would be shocked based on what I hear. So that's sort of his curse. Like, and so I wonder about the Graham thing, you know, like, yeah, he speaks very highly of Brian Flores, but push comes to shove, he's interviewing for the head coach job too, at the same time as Brian Flores. And I, you know, with Flores's authority issues and, you know, bedside manner, I wonder if Patrick Graham is long for that, that DC job.
Yeah, and I understand the apprehension a lot of people have out there because they look at Brian Flores, and I tend to agree with them. I'm not in that building, and I've said it before. I wouldn't have fired him. I wouldn't have fired him this year. But again, I am not in that building. I didn't have to deal with Brian Flores. I believe I said maybe two or three words to Brian Flores in the 3 years he was here. So, you know, I didn't have many interactions with the man. Okay, so all I saw was a really competent defensive guy. That wasn't, you know, they couldn't like kind of build an offensive staff, let's say, and started having some issues with clock management this past season. But other than that, I had no problems with him, you know, but mm-hmm. I understand the apprehension, but I promise you there's other competent defensive coaches out there. Okay. And one that evidently John Harbaugh. And by the way, that's another one.
Say there. Watch what you say there.
Yeah, watch what I say. Exactly. And by the way, I'll say this. John Harbaugh was on the hot seat 4 years ago. They were going to can him. And then all of a sudden, Lamar Jackson has an MVP season, and he sticks. The Ravens finished the season losing 7 in a row, or was it 6 in a row? How many was that in a row?
I don't remember.
Why wasn't he in the hot seat? Hmm. You know, let me see how many games they lost in a row.
I don't know. He strikes me as somebody that would get scooped up immediately.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you know, nobody here is worth, you know, really, really, you know, having all this angst over. Okay. And they lost. Let me see. They lost six in a row to finish the season. Yeah. Why wasn't he in the hot seat? Because if he were on the hot seat, that's a guy you go to the mattresses for, right?
Yeah. Well, and the reason that I would do it is just, He has a knack for putting together an excellent staff.
Yeah.
An excellent staff of assistant coaches.
And his teams are always in the mix. Like absolutely falling apart, they're always in the mix.
Always.
You know, but I don't think there's anybody out there like that. But moving off of John Harbaugh, he had a press conference of his own announcing that Wink Martindale, mm-hmm. His defensive coordinator, was going to part ways with the Baltimore Ravens, and he's now available out there. And it's being rumored that's Brian Daboll's guy as a DC. First of all, do you buy it? And your thoughts on Wink Martindale, who would be extremely expensive, by the way.
I think
I believe his salary was over $2 million. for
several offensive oriented head coaches. Several offensive oriented head coaches probably have to be thinking about Wink Martindale as the first person that they want to interview as a defensive coordinator. And so, but that's no guarantee that he's actually inclined to go with them. I guess the question is, you know, Brian Daboll may consider Wink Martindale his guy, but does Wink Martindale consider himself Brian Daboll's guy? And so that's the real, cause they, and I'm curious why they parted ways there, because, they went ahead and hired, Mike McDonald from Michigan. The defensive coordinator of Michigan is coming over to the NFL to be a defensive, a lateral move. The NFL would be a defensive coordinator for the Baltimore Ravens, which is an odd move, and kind of suggestive.
And I'll tag on to that. It's an odd move in this sense also. Those DCs, because I started looking up salaries, they make a pile of money, especially in the SEC. Have you seen what those defensive coordinators make? It's ridiculous. It's over $2 million, almost all of them. So, lateral move. I don't get it.
I mean, often you get guys from college, they go to the NFL. They don't quite get that lateral move. But he is. And I think that's interesting. I also wonder what that says about how serious Jim Harbaugh is about leaving Michigan. And you know, I've always kind of shat on the idea that that Jim Harbaugh is going to end up in Miami, because I've heard no. And also, like, in his very first press conference after dismissing Brian Flores, Steve Ross basically said no, know, and so I've always kind of felt no on that. But you do sort of wonder if, and this is a very low odds scenario, but like if Jim Harbaugh just made it clear to Steve Ross, like, listen, I'm going to the pros. I'm not staying in college anymore. You know, I'm sorry. I'm not, I don't know where I'll be next year, but it's not Michigan. You know, if he ever made that clear to Steve Ross, which I don't think, it wouldn't be his style. He's going to use Michigan as a bar, you know, as a player at the bargain to get the best deal. Like this is his style. But anyway, if he did do that, then you wonder if Steve Ross would circle back and be like, well, how about the Dolphins, you know? And I don't think it's the right fit, for him or for the Dolphins, but, and I think there are many people in the organization, including very high up, like even in ownership, that may question whether it's the right fit, but still it's always going to be a curiosity between these two, between Ross and, Harbaugh.
And speaking of other candidates, Jim Caldwell has emerged all of a sudden in Chicago. And it was interesting. Simon said yesterday, Jim Caldwell is in Hallis Hall. And I asked him, what has he lost? but he's made an appearance. I don't get why he's not a candidate here, but we made it very, very clear.
I mean, it was very clear from the start, but,
and you spoke about it on the podcast.
Either he doesn't want to be here, which is very possible. Or for some reason, the Dolphins truly question his health status. And this could be, like, keep in mind that when he was supposed to be the consultant here, he is 67 years old. When he was supposed to be the consultant in Miami, he ultimately, the official reason he left was for health reasons. Like, he was too unhealthy to coach or to do his job, his consulting job. And so the Dolphins may just, you know, ultimately, like, have to have taken from that he may say he's healthy enough now. So, but basically what's been told to me is, like, eyebrow raise, you know, he's ready to take the Chicago job, but to Miami, he's too unhealthy, you know, like, so it's kind of a little bit of gray area between the Dolphins thinking that he's not healthy enough, or maybe him telling the Dolphins, I'm not healthy enough to coach you, but I am healthy enough to coach the Bears, you know, like he just doesn't want to be there. So it's somewhere in between there, but I'm not surprised he's not a candidate.
And, another candidate that seems to be, you know, he's had the most interviews, by the way, is Dan Quinn. And I'm wondering why Mike McCarthy doesn't find himself with the pink slip and they just promote Dan Quinn, because early on it in this whole sequence, Jerry Jones was quoted as saying, you know, that they love Dan Quinn and they would be prepared to fight for Dan Quinn if it came down to it. But obviously you can't, you know, you can't fight against a head coach offer, but he's also out there. He's had his second interview, I believe, with the Giants, or his second with the Bears. So, but it's been very, very quiet on that front. I don't know if you've heard anything on that, because I haven't.
That's a really weird one, because, you know, yes, I have heard about him. There are some people that are positioned well, like in the media, that are privately, you know, yeah, we hear they really like Dan Quinn. And I think Adam Beasley said so publicly, if I recall correctly. And he nailed it in the last coach search with Brian Flores. Like, he nailed it. You know how I knew, because not only did he have the Brian Flores thing from the start and know that it was Brian Flores the whole time, which we didn't, you know, necessarily, but not only did he know that, but he also knew who came in second. And nobody else did. Well, I mean, my guy had been telling me this, but, like, you know, this is how I knew that Beasley was connected through the right sources, the right avenue, for his information. And so he had nailed it. And I think Beasley had mentioned Dan Quinn right away, that the Dolphins really like him. And that is possible, that they really like Dan Quinn, but he's also been interviewed by, I think, almost every single team that's got an opening. He's clearly the most coveted interview out there. So maybe the Dolphins, maybe the Dolphins aren't interested in the bidding war for Dan Quinn.
Mm-hmm. That seems likely, I would say. One name I can't get my hands around, and I just don't know too much about him, except that he stands right next to Sean McVay, but we're not hiring Sean McVay. The guy we interviewed is Thomas Brown. Do you have any information? Do you have an idea about Thomas Brown? Because he was down here. He was offensive coordinator for the Miami Hurricanes, and not impressive. Okay, let's just say that, right? But he goes to the Rams, and I'm always worried about this, and I know it's dismissive to say that he stands next to Sean McVay, but he stands next to Sean McVay. Yeah, you know, so that's kind of like what you like about him, right? He stands next to the guy that you kind of want, right? Like, if you could have your pick, like, I want the guys that are coaching this weekend. Like, you know, they're all fine with me, all of them, you know, but we can't have them. So we'll get the next best thing, the guy that stands right next to them, right? I don't know nothing about Thomas Brown. Do you?
Not much. I would actually think that you know more, just because he was with the
Hurricanes, and that's a problem.
All I know, so obviously they've heard good things. When you hear that they like Thomas Brown, it's like, yes, he's on the interview list for a reason. Everybody is on the interview list for a reason. Nobody would be on that interview list if they hadn't done their homework and really liked something about them. It's a short list. It's only seven people. It's so they like them all. So whenever you hear, like, this generalized kind of rumor mongering, like, oh, they like so-and-so, it's like, well, yeah, they like them all. That's why they're there. And I know that they like Thomas Brown. We've heard that they like Thomas Brown. They've heard some very good things about him. All I know is that he would probably give you access to installing that offense, the Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan style, you know, the LaFleurs and McDaniels and all them, that style of offense. That's what we would bring here, what he would probably bring here. And so that's a good fit, I think, for Tua Tagovailoa. It's a good fit for the run game, because, I mean, they always have a phenomenal run game in that offense, it seems like. And so I don't know much about him, but I kind of like directionally where it is.
All right. And that leads us to the last of these candidates that we'll talk about. And then I want to talk about something else. I want to talk about your favorite quarterback, Patrick Mahomes.
Oh God.
Okay. But last candidate we're going to talk about, is it safe to say that Mike McDaniel is our leader in the clubhouse? Because we seem to have a consensus, don't we? We kind of like the guy, right? Like, we kind of like the idea of, and I understand we're going to the well again, another young genius, right? that's gonna reinvent football here in Miami.
Sure. And not just that, but also, like, you know, the guy who's the offensive coordinator but doesn't call plays.
Yes.
You know, that type.
Yeah, I get it, people. Okay. All right. I get it. All right. But, you know, we're going to try it again.
He's the fan favorite. He is, like, in yes. all the polls that we've run, you know, and that you see out there, I think, generally speaking, he slightly edges out Brian Daboll as the fan favorite.
By the way, I got to call these people out because they deserve it. Did you see the article that Deadspin wrote?
yes. I was just looking at that right now. Like, sure. It's titled, sure, Mike McDaniel seems cool, but he's not worthy of a head coaching gig yet. And then under the subheading is, please stop and think before you inadvertently dub another young white guy as the next hot NFL coaching prospect. Yeah. And then they had to insert an editor's note. They're like, we learned after the publication of this article that 49ers OC Mike McDaniel, whom we described as a white guy, is in fact biracial. The article's original text remains below. We regret the error.
Yeah, just pull the whole fucking thing, please. Pull the whole thing. Just pull it.
Phenomenal. You know?
It's okay to pull the article, right? Just pull the article.
Just pull it.
Okay, it's like trust me, nobody really, really wants to read that. Okay, just pull the article. It's fine if you just pull it. But yeah, Mike McDaniel, every poll, and I conducted another one today on 3 yards per carry because on the 3 yards per carry Twitter account, because I wanted to keep tracking this. He keeps winning every poll. And today's, I think he was at 66%. And I made him, Brian Daboll, and Dan Quinn the top three guys, and then I put an other as the fourth. Option, and Mike McDaniel keeps winning these polls. Like, that's the fan favorite, and it seems like he's the favorite on this podcast. His team's playing for a spot in the Super Bowl again. If anything, he's kind of lucky, right? Because if he goes again, it'll be his third Super Bowl. He lost the other two, by the way. So, you know, so he's lucky. Like, you can say that, all right? Like, his teams play in Super Bowls.
They do.
But beyond that, we've talked about him enough. His offense works. And all you got to do is just look at how he uses his players and how his players talk about him. So I don't know. Safe to say he's the consensus on this podcast. That's who we want, right?
Well, I think he's refreshingly nerdy to a lot of people. Like, and what I mean by that is like, you know, there's sort of a gruff cliche coach, you know, coach persona. And, and I think that, for some people, some people get very tired of it. And I think that he's kind of refreshingly nerdy. He reminds people that, you know, listen, a coach's job is not to be tough. Like the players have to be tough. The players are out there physically performing and taking the pounding and doing everything. The coaches, their job is to essentially be nerds. I mean, and that's what people don't quite understand. They're essentially supposed to be researchers and video analysts and nerd and tinkerers and, you know, and nerd repositories of knowledge. That's their job. That's what they bring to the table, or what they're supposed to bring to the table, so that they can put these players in the best position to execute. And I think that a player will look at a Mike McDaniel and he's just gonna know in his mind immediately how to think of him. You know, this is how I think of him. Okay, this is how it is. And you know, he's not, and so you're not, the player isn't gonna be in that uncomfortable space between, you know, oh, this guy's supposed to be a leader of men because he lifts with us on Tuesdays and he barks out orders in his mean voice. But we don't win and, you know, we don't have very good game plans and stuff like that. I think they just immediately look at this guy. He's like, okay, he's a mad scientist type. And that's what he is. And I think if they get it, if the players understand it, then it'll be fine. It's not, you know, I don't think the leader of men thing really comes into it. I think he's interesting.
Yeah. Closing it out. Next Wednesday, we'll have a show. Will we have a head coach by then?
My feeling is, yeah. I think we're starting to see things accelerate a little bit.
And so you have San Francisco losing to the Rams and Mike McDaniel being hired on Monday is what you're saying?
I don't know.
Rim shot.
I'm just saying, I think by the time we record again, yes, we have a head coach.
All right. Care to make a prediction or no?
I'm
already in the, my horse is in the barn. I bet Mike McDaniel at +600 3 days ago. So, you know, I'm throwing my lot in with Mike McDaniel.
This almost varies minute to minute. Mm-hmm. But I am currently thinking that I would put my money on Brian Daboll.
Okay.
Where I would currently throw the money.
Right. Yeah, either one is probably a good bet.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And now we're gonna finish up with actual football. Okay. But we're gonna start with a quiz. You saw that game, Kansas City versus Buffalo, right?
Oh God, yes.
Okay. Do you know how many passes Patrick Mahomes? By the way, he was 33 of 44 for 378 yards, 3 touchdowns. Do you know how many passes he threw? Period. Threw past 20 yards.
In that game.
Yes.
No, I don't actually.
Would it surprise you if I told you zero?
Oh, really? Well,
yeah.
I thought he threw a deep one to Tyreek Hill at one point, like toward the end, didn't he?
Well, I'm looking at next gen stats, and we know that next gen stats does not lie.
Okay. All right. Well, all right.
All right. Do you know how many passes he threw over 15 yards? Okay.
I do not.
2.
Wow.
It gets better. Okay. His longest air yards pass of the day was right on the dot, 20 yards.
Really?
Yes. He threw 7 passes at the line of scrimmage or behind the line of scrimmage. Mm-hmm. 7. Do you know how many passes he threw past 10 yards total in the game?
Do not.
8.
So what you're saying is he basically played basketball.
What I'm saying is that he did a Tua Tagovailoa impersonation, just did it better.
All right. But let's be fair, because this is where people get really upset.
Well, and no, because you know, we're getting to this game because we
and then
just
they start calling us QAnon. And,
yeah,
and,
I know. I know. So but we saw two aliens play football on Sunday, but one of them played like our mortal, terrible quarterback. Just better.
Well, no, but a lot better, because when I watch the game, this boils down to the offensive coordinators too, because we're like, both offensive coordinators are like prominent head coach candidates. Eric Bieniemy just is talked about every year. And of course, Brian Daboll might be the leader in the clubhouse to be the Miami's head coach. But I was looking at it and my impression was that Josh Allen really executed the offense. Mm-hmm. And then like 80% of the time he was executing the offense and doing things that really any quarterback from a physical standpoint, any quarterback can do. And then you sprinkle in the 20% of stuff that only Josh Allen can do, like the called runs, you know, the sweeps and the stuff like that. Or the, you know, he had a couple of scramble and throws that were just vintage Josh Allen. But like most of what he did was execute the offense. I thought that they had a more solid fundamental offensive performance against that defense, whereas the Kansas City Chiefs was just all Patrick Mahomes and Mecole Hardman and Tyreek Hill just being like making ridiculous plays against players, like just because Patrick Mahomes the whole game was making people miss all over the place. Mm-hmm. And scrambling around. I mean, he was so vintage. And this is where it's like, don't compare Tua Tagovailoa to him, because you know, the way that Patrick Mahomes scrambled around, made people miss, had big runs, And you know, the way he could change his arm slot and throw those, you know, throw those sidearm passes and the velocity that he gets and stuff. I mean, yeah, it might have been short oriented, but it was still showcasing his ability like really well. And I think that the Kansas City Chiefs offense performance was a bunch of individual performances like that. And Mecole, don't understate Mecole Hardman's impact in the game too. I'm not saying he's a great player, but he did have an impactful game by making people miss and look silly. And so like he and Tyreek Hill, they were difference makers in that game. Whereas I thought all the way around the Buffalo offense was just well-rounded, well-executed, well-called. Josh Allen was doing a great job, and they should have won the game. They ultimately should have won the game.
Yes.
Like they absolutely should have won the game. It was pointed out to me by a friend of mine who's a Buffalo fan and he hates his life, but he's always hated being a Buffalo fan. But like I saw him on Twitter say something like with 13 seconds left, they literally could have just tackled all of the wide receivers. Just right after the snap, just tackle them, take the penalty, and then go on to the next play and do it again. And the worst that would have happened is that the Chiefs would have had to throw a Hail Mary from their own 45-yard line.
Which they probably complete, let's face it.
Well, I mean, but the way things are going. But yeah, that is a literal truth.
Yeah.
And so Buffalo fans are hating themselves on that. Yeah, because
you told me that, and I started reading the rule book because I was wondering, you know, could they be called for like, you know, for unsportsmanlike for the third or fourth time they do it? It's not in the rule book, and I don't.
It wouldn't be three or four times. It would be twice. But yeah, go on.
Yeah, because my fear is that with penalties, you know, they'll have an untimed down at your own at our, you know, let's say we're the Bills. At our 20-yard line or 25-yard line. Like, that's something I wouldn't want. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But, yeah, well, in the rule book, it says that unsportsmanlike conduct cannot be subjective. It has to be – you have to have a reason for it. And I don't think a play that is an actual penalty can be a reason. You know what I mean? Like, if you throw a punch, yeah, that's 15 yards. Well, I mean,
if
you hold a
guy, if you guilty of defensive holding, essentially.
Mm-hmm. That's 5 yards.
They could have committed penalties that would have accomplished running out the clock, and yes, they would have gotten penalized, but it would have ended in a Hail Mary. I mean, and I'm not saying they just like automatically just tackle everybody, but they could have committed. The point is, they could have committed penalties and gotten it done. And I, you know, what's funny about that is a football coach would never. Right. You know, it just seems like they have this thing. Right. But like a basketball coach, an NBA coach, you're goddamn right. He would.
Yeah.
You know, you're goddamn right that they would use.
And they would joke about it like that. Popovich used it. Remember the Hack-a-Shack? He created.
He created
the Hack-a-Shack.
He created Hack-a-Shack, Hack-a-Bowen and Hack-a-Shack, you know, like And I think that, you know, basketball coaches, and they lauded for it by the commentary and the analysts and stuff like that. Well, this is what you got to do. You know, they've got to do an intentional foul here. And, you know, they really are. And it's part of it. But football coach, like Leslie Frazier would never. that's how kind of stuffy football is to me.
Except a couple of years ago, one of my favorite moments in playoff history was when Mike Vrabel, Bill Belichick does the Bill Belichick and thing by trying to take a penalty on a punt, and Mike Vrabel says, "You know what? We'll decline the penalty and we'll take the runoff." Remember, he had Bill Belichick kill almost a minute of his own clock. Remember, and Bill Belichick started looking at the referee like, "Is this asshole serious?"
Yeah,
you remember that, right?
Yeah.
That was great thinking by Mike Vrabel. I remember he started even smiling on the sideline, like, "I got Bill with this." Bill ended up killing a minute of his own clock when he's behind. So yeah. So what did you make of it? You know, everybody's talking about, you know, like we should just basically just end the podcast here because we don't have Josh Allen or or Pat Mahomes, and those guys are going to rule the AFC, which is possible, by the way.
But it's just basically like the game was reinvented. With that game. Like, listen, it was a shootout between two physically gifted, phenomenal quarterbacks. I mean, they're both really good quarterbacks. They're not just physically gifted. They're really good quarterbacks. But they are among, like, there are great quarterbacks who are physically gifted like them. And then there are great quarterbacks who are not physically gifted like Tom Brady, you know, Peyton Manning and Drew Brees and such. They come in all shapes and sizes. I always try to tell people this. They're every single one of them is a lightning bolt from God. Every single one of them is an outlier. There is no law of averages.
Pat Riley himself, the great Pat Riley.
That is his term.
Dwayne Wade is a lightning.
I shamelessly stole it from him.
Yeah, he says it. He says, no, you know, we went out and we got Alonzo Mourning because we felt, you know, a defensive center was going to be the heart and soul of this team. And obviously you got to get perimeter defense. But when you get a guy like Dwayne Wade, it's just a lightning bolt from God. It makes everything else possible.
Right.
And that's who those guys are.
Anyway, that's how I feel about the quarterback position, elite quarterbacks. It's such an impossible thing to do to play elite level quarterback in the NFL for consistently and for a long period of time, that every single one of them is an outlier. There is no law of averages, and there is no, you know, the ceiling floor talk drives me nuts. But anyway, these are among the physically gifted quarterbacks, Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen, and they were on display. They were facing defenses that had their thumbs collectively up their asses. Mm-hmm. And so this turned into a shootout, and it's classic. It was classic football. It was really, really entertaining, but everybody wanted to take from it, like, well, this is just how the playoffs are. This is just how the playoffs are. And if you don't have one of those guys, you don't even, well, why you even show up? Why even show up in the game? Like, why, what? Yeah. What are you doing? Like, we don't have a guy that can compete like that. We don't have Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen. And it's just like, first off, were you even watching the rest of the weekend? Because did you not see the San Francisco and Green Bay game, you know, where Jimmy Garoppolo takes down the NFL MVP Aaron Rodgers, you know, and
the runner up goes down to Matt Stafford.
Right. And so it's like, did you not even see this or like, okay, so Tom Brady is Tom Brady and we know that, but he's not among the physically gifted quarterbacks. The guy is old as dirt and he's never had a strong arm and he's got cement in his feet. And yet he's still, not taking away from his overall ability as a quarterback, he's still among the best, but he came back. Like, he did an incredible thing, and it got lost because the Rams ended up going down there and getting the field goal and winning the game at the last second. But he brought them back from a 24-point deficit in the third quarter, you know, in a playoff game. That is goddamn mm-hmm. impressive. And so, you know, yeah, there are many ways to skin the cat. Some of these guys are really physically impressive.
And I gotta say, these guys aren't. And I gotta applaud you. You said once that Tom Brady played the game personally. What he did to Jalen Ramsey was one of the most masterful things I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
He hit an 8-yard comeback on Jalen Ramsey with Mike Evans. He hits a 12-yard comeback on Jalen Ramsey with Mike Evans. So what comes next? Double move, bomb on Jalen Ramsey, 50-yard touchdown.
This is how he plays the game. He plays it very personally. He plays it very like.
I saw that, and it reminded me of you. And I was like, wow, Tom Brady really is good at this, isn't he?
He targets individual players. He smells blood in the water for whatever reason. He sets them up. You know, it's not like setting up quote unquote the defense. Like, he sets up individual players. And that's the way he plays the game. I mean, he's throwing
to a Hall of Famer, by the way. Yeah.
When they talk about him being a competitor, it's because like he will literally want to look an individual in the eyes and then beat him at something like beer pong. Like, you know, like that's just the way that he is. And so he did that and he came back from that 24-point lead. He is not a physically impressive quarterback. You know, yeah, he's the greatest, but he's not among the physically impressive guys. But seriously, one game where Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes go toe to toe in a really entertaining shootout that featured zero defense whatsoever, And suddenly the game is reinvented and we need not apply because we don't have a physically impressive quarterback. And they're like, and then we're having this debate privately and people are like, you know, oh, are you really comparing Tua Tagovailoa to Drew Brees or Tom Brady or something like that? I'm like, well, yeah, that's the goal. I mean, you draft the guy and you develop the guy because you're hoping he turns, you know, the odds are against you. You know, the odds were against Josh Allen becoming Josh Allen. The odds were against Drew Brees becoming Drew Brees. You know, the odds were always are always against these. Every single one of them, the odds are against them. But this is why you play the game. This is why you what you're hoping for. And so, yes, like there's that's Tua's path. That's what he's going to have to try and be. And it's a valid path, but people are now pretending because they saw Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen engage a shootout that path is shut down. Like it's just not a thing. And I'm like, talk about prisoner of the moment. It throws me off a little.
Yeah. All right. On the way out here, I guess we just got to pick these two games. NFC first, because I think we both know what we're going to say in the AFC. But NFC first, you have Mike McDaniel and the little engine that could, right? They run the ball. They play defense. They don't make mistakes. They manage the game. San Francisco, who's beaten the Rams 6 games in a row, by the way. Okay? Mm-hmm. And beat them the last week of the season. By the way, that's another thing. Okay? Our draft pick keeps getting worse and worse and worse. Let's not forget that.
The 49ers are going to be bad this year.
Who even
listens to me? Why does anybody even listen to me?
Do you know that if Jimmy Garoppolo just has one incompletion in that last game of the season, we end up with the better pick?
Yeah, I mean that's how close.
Because we win the tiebreaker. We both go 9-8 and we get the tiebreaker and our pick is better.
Credit to them. They won playoff games, which is what we can't even do when we do make the playoffs. So,
well, no, but they threw into the end zone. They needed a last second touchdown to beat the Rams the last week of the season. Yeah. So if they don't get that one, we get the better pick because we actually finish ahead of them.
Yeah.
But no, that doesn't happen. So they're the little engine that could. They play good defense, have great coaching. They have Mike McDaniel. They have Jimmy Garoppolo and, you know, and all that and all that comes with it. Okay, against the Rams, which are a great roster, like top to bottom. You look at that roster, you gotta like it. Okay, it's a really good roster that made a moderate. You know what? Let's not poo poo it. It wasn't moderate. It was a real upgrade at quarterback from Goff to Matt Stafford. They're the other model.
Somebody brought this up, and I'm trying to think about it. I've been trying to think about it since before we started recording because it just happened a couple hours ago. And I saw somebody bring up, okay, let's pretend that he does get to the Super Bowl and win it. Mm-hmm. Matthew Stafford does. He might go in the Hall of Fame.
He won his first playoff game this year. Yeah. I was, look at his numbers. like how do you deny those numbers? Right.
Exactly. Like he might go in the Hall of Fame. He wins a Super Bowl.
You know, and he was such a loser coming into the season. Never won a playoff game. 0-3 in playoff games.
Yep.
Always managed to throw the bad pick at the bad moment. This year he wins his first playoff game. He wins his second playoff game. And now he's trying to win his third playoff game. So it begs the question. You have the little engine that could, that plays team ball, you know, rah-rah, you know, all the pom-poms and, you know, mom, dad, apple pie, run the football, play defense versus the Rams, which are essentially they bought a roster. They upgraded that quarterback. Does San Francisco make it 7 in a row? I'm going to start first and say no. And I'm going to say that the Rams break the string and that the Rams are the second consecutive team to play at home in the Super Bowl. I say the Rams win it. Let's call it 24-20 Rams. Your thoughts
on the against the 49ers? Yes, I do believe the Rams win the game. I think this reminds me a lot of last year with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who also bought a roster and they started to coalesce, you know, toward the end of the season and at the right moments. And I think that you know, I kept doubting them all the way, including right up through the Super Bowl with where I picked the Kansas City Chiefs to win that game. And then, you know, it was just I think it was their time. I think it is possible that it might be even be the Rams' time to win the Super Bowl here. You know, you got a guy like Aaron Donald, never underestimate the impact that he can make on that side. When he just constantly harasses the other quarterback. So I will pick the Rams to win this game. I don't know about a score. You know, I hate to say that the 49ers are going to have poor offensive showing because Mike McDaniel might be our next coach, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's the Rams and it's a pretty big victory.
All right. And in the AFC, you're picking Cincinnati, right?
No.
Look, I'm not gonna pick another blowout because I did this last week and it blew up in my face. Okay, yeah, I thought you know, and then I should have thought better. Like I'm actually gonna pick Ryan Tannehill to blow out anybody. No, it wasn't gonna happen. Okay, and Derrick Henry wasn't Derrick Henry. He was maybe 70% worth of Derrick Henry, and Tennessee just didn't look. They looked listless. Okay, yeah. Even though they made a huge rush at the end and probably should have won the game because, you know, they played the right coverage. They just didn't cinch that up because everybody's scared to death to give up a bomb, and especially to Ja'Marr Chase, okay, who you know can run. So everybody ends up playing soft because they don't want to look like an idiot. Well, guess what? You just look like an idiot giving up an 18-yard out pattern that sets up a 45-yard field goal. You know what I mean? Sure. So I'd rather give up the touchdown, actually. You know, because at least that way I have, you know, 40 seconds to try to get it back. But no, you give up what is essentially going to be a gimme field goal because that field goal kicker is on fire, by the way, McPherson, the rookie. I'm just going to go ahead and say it again. I think Kansas City really puts it on Cincinnati. I think it's going to be too much too soon. Big performance by the Chiefs. Call it two touchdowns. Let's go 31-17. Chiefs.
I am really conflicted because I have liked the Chiefs for years. I'm the hugest Patrick Mahomes fan, you know that. But at the same time, I didn't like how he won that game against the Bills. And I wonder if he tries to do that again, because when he tries to play that way, when he tries to win the game that way, like sometimes it just looks absolutely brilliant. And then other times it's the reason they lost, you know? And so I'm nervous about the coin flip factor. Like Patrick Mahomes starts to try and play that way and be him, you know, be the God on the football field that he is at times. And it just doesn't work. Like, and so that's what I get nervous about is, you know, yes, I want to pick them against the Cincinnati Bengals because they should win. But it also wouldn't surprise me if it's like, if it just really falls flat. And like the Bengals are like holding some big lead until the end of the game when Patrick Mahomes starts to charge hard on them. And then he just can't get it done at the end. You know, that would not surprise me. But yeah, I'll go ahead and pick Kansas City to be back in the Super Bowl again, and it's going to be against the Rams. So
yeah, so we're in complete agreement. Although I will say one thing: that Chiefs defense. Watch the injury report this week. Tyrann Mathieu, as soon as he left that game, that defense looked like absolute garbage. Yeah. And if there's an offense that could take advantage of absolute garbage, it's Cincinnati. Like Cincinnati could really, really, really pile on the points. If you're not on your P's and Q's.
Well, they're so wide open. And somebody pointed this out because, you know, I used to talk about this with the Dolphins offensive line and how shitty the Dolphins offensive line is. And we understand that. What drove me crazy even more is that, you know, is turtling up because of the offensive line and not really trying to run a mature NFL offense or passing offense because of it. You know, I think sometimes you got to trust the quarterback to be a big boy. And I think sometimes, you know, you gotta try and get the offensive lineman to do hard things and get used to doing hard things. And maybe grow as players. And you gotta get everybody in that offense to grow and learn to play a mature NFL passing offense. And the Bengals do that because they do not have a good line. They do not have a good offensive line, but they do open it up, and they don't care if Joe Burrow gets sacked 10 times, you know, or something like that in a game. They open it up and they keep throwing, and they've got a great weapon in what's his name, Jamar Chase, and we understand,
and Higgins, and we understand that
they have great weaponry, but you know what, Miami has some decent weapons too, with Jalen Waddle, Mike Gesicki, and Devontae Parker, and you know this is why I was begging, like, you know, yeah, okay, Joe Burrow took 9 sacks in the game and in that last game against the Titans. But, you know, they kept things wide open, and they kept going after it, and they won. You know, they won the game. They threw for 350 yards. So
that's another quarterback that didn't throw a pass past 20 yards, by the way.
Well, yeah, and he doesn't. That's not – well, he can throw the deep ball, but, like, it's sort of the Chad Pennington-type accurate deep ball, not the – you know, not the missile. But yeah, so I think that, there's lessons to be learned from how the Cincinnati Bengals offense plays, with Joe Burrow at quarterback, and, you know, how he's behind an offensive line that's really challenged. And yet they have no fear. They move forward and they get it, and they matured and got it done.
All right. Well, that's going to be it. You heard us. You heard Chris. I'm not so sure, but I'm going to go ahead and say that Chris is right. The next time we record, we will have a head coach. We will have a new head coach. It'll be our 4,000th head coach since Don Shula, by the way. You know, so we will talk about it or not, or we'll talk about the Super Bowl. But hopefully we do have a head coach. But that's it. There is no more. We will talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to 3 Yards Per Carry. You can subscribe via iTunes, on Podbean, or your usual podcast provider.